Do you ever wonder what's happening behind the scenes of the multi-trillion dollar fashion industry? In the new podcast, Fashion People, Puck correspondent and 20-year fashion veteran Lauren Sherman and a rotating cast of industry insiders discuss what fashion people are really talking about behind the scenes of the star-studded business, from creative director switcheroos to M&A drama, DTC downfalls, and Met Gala mishaps. Fashion People, a presentation of Odyssey in partnership with Puck, is available now wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. Probably should have a script too. That's useful. All right.
Yeah.
We'll wing it. And here we go. Hello, everyone. I am Kimberly Adams, and welcome back to Make Me Smart, where none of us is as smart as all of us.
I'm Kyle Rosendahl. Thanks for everybody joining us on the YouTube live stream or the podcast, the Discord. Take your pick. Economics on Tap is what we do on a Friday. We talk about the news over drinks, although I should say, full disclaimer here, I'm drinking water because I have to drive later. So, you know, just hydrating.
And that is the safe and proper choice. Yes. Absolutely. Love that
Thank
for you.
You.
All right. Let's see what we have. Everybody's talking about Elon Musk. I can't see any drinks. All right. Here we go. I see some Oban that Ben is drinking, which is a very nice one. And you know what? I'm having red wine. So since everybody wants to talk about Musk, we may as well just go for it. Well, this is your news item, Kai. You go ahead.
Unbelievable. So this afternoon, about 2:25-ish LA time, it breaks on Twitter via filings with the SEC in a letter that Musk's lawyer released that he is trying to, and I emphasize the word trying to get out of his $44 billion signed, sealed, and deliver offer to buy Twitter. Now, I believe I'm on the record many, many moons ago on this podcast saying that this was not going to happen and that he was just bleeping with us. And you know what?
You did.
I was right. He did.
You bet a whole paycheck on it.
The richest man in the world is a troll. He's trolling us. He's doing it because he can. I don't even know what's going on. But all we've gotten out of this is, number one, Twitter shareholders have lost a boatload of money, down another like 10% after hours, right? Some lawyers got really, really rich. Media and tech journalists got spun around in about 14 different circles. And that's where we are. I don't know. I mean, God. What a jerk.
I have to say, there's a great meme in the Discord right now of Stephen Colbert pointing to a giant I told you so sign.
Yes.
Oh, boy. I am so fascinated to see what the SEC does with this, the Securities and Exchange Commission, because, again, as you said, richest man in the world, army of lawyers, a troll. Yep. Like, what are they going to do? What could you possibly, let's just say that they find that he broke the deal. What could you possibly fine him that it would matter?
Right. But look, I don't think this actually is an SEC matter unless you get into, you know, market manipulation somehow, which is what he has arguably done previously with, you know, going private at 420 and all of that jazz. But here's the deal. He signed a merger agreement after having waived any due diligence. And his stated rationale in the letter that his lawyer released today is, ooh, you didn't give me the information that I asked you. Well, Mr. Musk, the way it works with due diligence is you do your due diligence and then you sign the binding merger agreement. Okay? And that is why the chairman of the board of Twitter tweeted out this afternoon, in essence, we will see you in court. He said, we are confident we will prevail in the Delaware Court of Chancery. The Twitter board is committed to closing the transaction on the price and terms agreed upon with Mr. Musk. We'll see you in court. Or you can just give us $44 billion. You know?
Nice options. Man, yeah, this is going to be some high legal drama.
Oh, my God. And you know, $44 billion, while not chump change, and look, there are problems that Musk was going to have with financing this deal and putting his Tesla shares up and coming up with the cash and all this jazz. Fundamentally, it's only like 20% of his net worth. So while not chump change, you know, I don't know. I'm so irritated. Which is a stupid thing to be irritated about. But
I'm about to say, it feels like you're taking this quite personally.
Well, mostly because I knew this was going to happen. You know? Here's what bugs me, right? How to put this? He is flat out a visionary, right? He created the modern electric vehicle market, and that alone could change the world. He could literally change the world by getting us to Mars, right? He is a visionary, but he's also an immature, disrespectful, arrogant jerk. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure I'm getting way off topic here, and this is a rant I didn't mean to be on, but I'm sure you saw earlier this week that it has been revealed that Mr. Musk fathered twins with one of his employees. Then he goes and tweets and he says, underpopulation is a real problem. I'm doing my part. And you're like, what? What? All right, that's it. I'm done. Rant over.
Well, him and the Supreme Court are working on that, so.
I know, right? Yeah. So that's my news.
That is my rant. Yes. My news is very, I'm stuck on the January 6th hearings still and always. And I am still thinking about those two election workers who testified. I think it was first day. Yeah, talking about how they've been, attacked. They had to leave their homes. They've been called all sorts of things. They're featured in fake documentaries and just all of the horrors and traumas that they've been through for trying to do their civic duty and to help our country with our elections. The Associated Press has a story today about how election workers all over the country are resigning. En masse, because of the abuse and the threats and people following them and just trying to do the job, it's almost too much. It's not what people signed up for. And on the one hand, I get it and I feel for those people. But on the other hand, I just wonder who's going to take their place. Because there are a lot of very, very partisan people who are happy to step into those roles to try to shape the elections in one way or another. And sure, I imagine many other civic-minded people who don't want to unduly influence the elections will step in also. But what happens when we make it impossible for people to even try to do the right thing to help the country? And this was very concerning to me. So, Annie Rigg in the YouTube chat says, I'm scared as an election judge. I stay because I need to protect the process. Thanks, Annie.
Yeah, thank you. If you haven't seen the footage of those two women, it's amazing and terrifying and horrifying. All right. Let's
now
go,
we
Drew.
Really need a hard pivot.
Let's go. Yeah, now I need a beer.
All right. So now it is time for Half Full, Half Empty, hosted by the one and only and amazing Drew Jostad. Hey, Drew.
Hi, Kimberly. Are you half full or half empty on states handing out tax rebates?
That's a tough one. I have given thought to this, and I still don't really know.
So
I'm going to go half
the deal.
Full.
Some states. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Sorry. I was just
you explain it first.
You're
going to
go
that's
half full.
A good point.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So here's what's happening. Some states, California among them, are whose coffers are rich because of a lot of federal aid money, actually, and an upswing in the business cycle, are giving their taxpayers tax rebates. Some of them are, inflation protection checks, whatever you want to call it. Californians, depending on income, get $1,050. I think in Indiana, it's like $125, no matter how much you make. The catch, of course, is that doing that could lead to more inflation. That said, people are really hurting, and I think the impact will only be marginal. So I think probably it's a good thing. So I'll go half full. With Kimberly?
Yeah, that's kind of where I was landing. It's like, I get the inflationary concerns, but I think that it's going to mean a lot to people who need it. And
Yeah.
You know, we have ways to counteract the inflationary concerns, as we well know. We're living through it. So half full.
Yep. Yep.
Okay. Half full or half empty on the sky over South Dakota turning green.
I know nothing.
I missed
about
the story. I don't know this.
But I'm half empty because that can't possibly be good.
Phone a friend, Drew.
It's a freaky weather thing. That's all I really know.
Well, then I'm going to go half empty because, as Kai said, that cannot be good.
Cannot be good.
Unless it's like the Aurora Borealis went really far south. Oh, wait. Is it the Aurora Borealis in the north or is it the other one?
Aurora Borealis is in the north and Aurora Borealis is in the south.
Thank you.
I do believe.
All right.
Anyway, empty.
Half full or half empty on coupons.
I care deeply about this story.
Wow. Ooh, that one struck a nerve.
It did. So basically, coupons are becoming less common because, A, fewer people are getting like a paper newspaper where the coupons are inserted, and many more people are paying with their phones or using discount apps or shopping online. And so coupons are less valuable or less common, I should say. Now, as someone who still clips coupons from my paper newspaper every week, I have noticed these trends over the last few years where there are fewer coupons, for sure. The coupons are more restrictive in many ways. Instead of it being like a bucket of products, it's like this one specific product in this specific size. And it tends to only be like the higher end branded products. So you have to really be strategic if you're going to use them. And then people look at you like you're crazy if you hand them a coupon in a store. And now I keep getting these notices from the Washington Post that they're cutting back on coupons. And, you know, I get it. And I have also, you know, somebody just said in the YouTube chat, Linda, I clip coupons and forget to bring them to the store. Me also. But sometimes I do. And I'll do this strategic thing with like my CVS coupon, my CVS extra long receipt coupons, and then my coupons from the newspaper. And I'll end up with this like couponing like smorgasbord and have like $40 off my bill and feel very proud of myself.
And awesome for you, actually, because it's a lot of work to do that stuff. I have some questions, though. Is this a learned habit from your parents, your mom?
Yes, probably from growing up broke.
Okay. All right. Good. Okay. Yeah. And also, what about digital coupons? Do you not do those?
No, I do not, because I know it's just data harvesting. So.
Okay. All right. That's fair.
I do my best not to like associate my rewards cards with my actual phone number, and I have a couple and I switch them up and, you know, try not to just give away all of my personal shopping data, even though I know it's probably linked back to my credit card somewhere, but whatever. So no, I don't use the digital coupons. I don't want people knowing that much of my business. Not that anybody cares.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
What about you? Are you half full or half empty?
Oh, I, you know, I'm not a couponer, so I have no strong opinion.
Do you do a lot of the shopping in your house?
I'd say it's 50-50. I'd say it's 50-50.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. She cooks a little more than I do, but I think shopping is even steam. Anyway.
Are you a decent cook at all?
I've got like a five recipe repertoire that I can bang out. No problem, and to great satisfaction. My wife is the far better cook. Far better.
Nice.
Cook. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. What's next, Drew?
I'm going to have to set this one up a little bit. Earlier this year, Logan Paul apparently paid $6 million for a rare Pokemon card. And within the last year, the Pokemon company has printed 9 billion cards, which is more than double of the previous year. Are you half full or half empty on a Pokemon card bubble?
I saw that story about all those Pokemon cards, and all I could think of was my now 21-year-old son at the age of like 6 waking me up on a Saturday morning to play Pokemon with his Pokemon cards. So I'm half empty on anything having to do with Pokemon. Full stop. Burn it all down.
So I don't understand. Somebody bought a very expensive Pokemon card and then they printed more of them?
Those were unrelated news items.
They're just sort of orbiting the same Pokemon universe.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to go, is there a Pokemon bubble? I'm going to go half full. I think there's probably a bubble, Beanie Baby bubble, Pokemon bubble. Do you remember Pogs?
Yeah, that's probably, yes. Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Pokemon cards and Pogs kind of had the same ascent and you know, Pokemon came back around, I think mostly thanks to Pokemon Go, but and also anime and the people, anime getting more popular, but Pogs didn't survive. Okay.
Boom.
The end.
The end. We are back on Monday. Tuesday, though, we're going to do a deep dive on the state of labor organizing in this mid and post-pandemic economy because it has changed. So we'll talk about some of the current trends and what it might mean for the future of organized labor and also thus work in this economy.
And if you have strong feelings about that or just feelings in general, not necessarily strong ones, but some you'd like to share, you can send us your thoughts and questions. You can email us at makemesmart@marketplace.org, or you can leave us a voice message. We are at 508-827-6278, a.k.a. 508-UBSMART.
Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera. Today's episode was engineered by, of course, Drew Jostad. The senior producer is Bridget Bodner.
The team behind our Friday game is Stephen Bion, Mel Rosenberg, Emily McCune, with theme music written by the same Drew Jostad. And the director of On Demand is Donna Tam.
Another week down. Everybody
Thanks.
Take the next 2 days off.
They want to know why you
Adam
don't do
Fierce
a dance like I do.
I was just going to say, doesn't Kai dance like Kimberly? Because I don't dance. Do we? Have we?
At all? Ever?
How do people? No, no. Come on, no.
Oh, wait till I come to LA.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.